quarantine's got me feeling down, down, down. I did not agree to be homeschooled again, so I'm gonna find a way to come out of this. So I'm starting a podcast, it's called Quarantine, and on it I'm just gonna talk for the sake of it, 'cause I'm bored in my house, and I'm alone in my house,
Hi guys, and welcome to the very first episode of Quarantine. A weekly podcast dedicated to bringing informative, relatable, and sometimes even lighthearted topics to your notifications. We're going to be spilling the tea on the experience of quarantine inside and outside the house, overall finding a way to create a new normal in this new life. I'm your host, Beth Cassidy, journalist, creator, influencer, shoulder to cry on, and I'm here today with Dr. Laura Naus, a clinical psychologist whose expertise focuses on the nature assessment and treatment of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, or otherwise referred to as ADHD. All the way here from the University of Richmond, Dr. Naus is graciously remotely coming to UW to chat with us about her tips and tricks for ideal self-regulation at home. Hello, Dr. Naus. Welcome Hello. To the show.
Thank you for having me here.
So you have a YouTube channel that goes along with your research on ADHD about self-regulation. Can you give us an overview of the content on your YouTube channel?
Sure. Well, a little backstory. So when we all went into quarantine, at least here at U of R, it was right after spring break. Some of my colleagues in our counseling center were trying to create content that they knew could help students that come to the counseling center, just like students in general, to survive and thrive better at home. And they knew that I had done a lot of work in what's called cognitive behavioral therapy for ADHD. So CBT, really in short, it's how to look at your behavior patterns and the way that you're thinking and to try out new skills and ways of being that can help you just do better in your life and kind of be more satisfied. And so there have been cognitive behavioral therapies for anxiety disorders, depression, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, for lots of conditions. And in the last decade, these kinds of treatments have been developed also for people with ADHD. And so they knew I had the expertise, like I do some group work with students. And so they said, hey, like what tips and tricks from this CBT perspective might be helpful for students who are having difficulty kind of getting themselves to do stuff at home. So paying attention, not getting distracted, motivating yourself, being structured. I personally know that professors are also having issues with this. Most people that I talk to, you know, one of the biggest things about studying and working from home isn't necessarily that the work itself got any harder. It's that you're just having to put forth a lot more effort to try to make yourself do stuff. At least that's how I kind of think of it. And so these kind of tips that I put out there are, I would say that this is true for a lot of the stuff that I do and recommend for people with ADHD. They're not rocket science in the sense that, you know, they're productivity tips, self-regulation tips that you can read in a lot of self-help books and things. But the thing is, they kind of seem simple, but it's actually like doing them until they become a habit that's the trick, right? Like it's so easy to read about something and think, oh yes, that strategy should work. But it's quite another thing to not only start doing it, but like troubleshoot it, right? When it doesn't go quite right for you. So what I thought to myself was, okay, I'm not going to give like every single tip that I can think of. I want to focus on like, I kind of call it desert island self-regulation. Like if I only was allowed to bring like 3 or 4 strategies to my desert island to help people, you know, what are the things that I think give the most bang for the buck in terms of the ability to self-regulate? So I didn't, it's interesting. I thought about it a little differently than I would if I were working in the clinic. I just sort of thought, okay, if you have the average person, you're trying to get stuff done, like what's the easiest first step? Shall I talk about the steps or is that enough?
Yes, please talk about the steps.
Okay. Sure.
Yeah, and if you want to give examples, if you have those.
Oh, absolutely. So, so the first thing that I recommend to get started with is just have a list, a short list of daily goals. I think sometimes the biggest problem is like you feel like you have all this stuff to do and you don't get started and it just starts to feel overwhelming, the fact that you haven't started anything. So having that first step be, what are 3 to 5 things that I want to accomplish today? And when I say things, I'm even including things like do your laundry. So, because I don't know how you feel, but I feel when I'm working from home, like one thing that's hard is that line between my home life and my work life is very blurred. And so I found for me that it was really important to have a mix of things on there. So for example, I know that today I definitely want to, like, say, finish writing this letter of recommendation for the student, like, I don't know, finish a PowerPoint for a presentation I'm going to give, ride my Peloton bike, and do the dishes, you know, something like that. Because I think it's important to do that self-care. And also, like, checking those things off your list can give you a sense of accomplishment and can also kind of prevent you from, let's say, using those other things as distractions from the schoolwork, because that can certainly happen sometimes. I don't know if you experienced this. I remember as a student, it would be like, during final exam week, all of a sudden, it's really important for me to clean my room. You know?
Last night, I was supposed to be writing these questions out, and Time actually emailed me at like 11, and I was like, she is up just as late, if not way more than me. Like, what's going on? And I was just stressing. It's like a Tuesday night, so I was just vacuuming the apartment at 1 a.m.
Right. And the reason, I think one reason there is that it's something you can see you have direct control over, right? Like if I vacuum, I look down and now the carpet's clean. Whereas so much of this intellectual work that we all do, we don't see the immediate results of our efforts, especially if it's something we're like feeling anxious about. So that's why I sort of have people to say, okay, come up with 3 to 5 daily goals, and making sure that those goals are both specific and realistic. So I give this example of like one of your goals for sure should not be write my final paper for my history class. That is a terrible goal. I look at that goal and I want to run away or hide. So I'm automatically going to start vacuuming instead of doing that, right? It's not specific and it's not realistic. Like, it's amorphous. I don't know where to start. So getting people to think, okay, well, what's the first little bite offable kind of chunk of that? Like, okay, find 3 solid sources and take notes for my history paper, maybe something like that. But if you look at that and you're like, gross, I can't even do that. Okay, one source, you know, make it. Sometimes people worry about that because they're like, well, I'm not going to get anything done. Well, you know what happens is sometimes when you get that first source, you get in what's called behavioral momentum, and you might actually just kind of keep going with it. So it's like, as an example of this with myself, for whatever reason, I'm an extrovert, but I hate like calling people on the phone for like business purposes. So I'll be like, okay, all I have to do is look up their number. And then once I look up the number, I'll call them, right? But like, you know, so... And then 3 to 5, you know, crossing it off when you get it done, if you find that rewarding. And then another little tweak to that, of course, people can look at the video, is thinking about in what order do you want to do these things? So you might, for example, like do the easiest thing first if you're having trouble getting going, or you might want to do the hardest thing first so that you can sort of have your goals go in downhill order, you know, not like make yourself do the heaviest lift when you're feeling tired. So the first thing I do is I sit down and I come up with my 3 to 5 daily goals, and then I put numbers next to them based on the order that I'm going to try to do them. And then I always ask my clients, like, okay, how are you going to feel about yourself if you only do 3 of your 5 goals? And I'll ask you, how would you feel?
Depending on the mood I'm in, if I'm really hard on myself that day, I will think I'm an ultimate failure. But I mean, if I'm feeling nice to myself, I will be like, good job, you can take a nap now.
Yeah, nice. Exactly. And I would also say, so that's one part of the cognitive part, like coaching yourself. I would also say you could coach yourself to be like, you know, thinking about how would your best friend react? They're not going to be like, oh my God, like, why didn't you do all your, you know, like, look, 3 is better than none. And a lot of times if you wouldn't have made that list, it might've been none. So the list is hard, right? Cause you look at it and it can feel like, oh my God, I have these 5 things to do. But knowing that that is all in the service of you actually maybe being a little bit more successful, not perfect, right? But like more successful. Sorry, I talk a lot. It's a psychologist thing. Is this okay?
I'm always like about to interrupt and then I'm like, no, listen, I'm the same way.
Do you want me to give a brief overview of the other two, maybe, real quick?
There's two more videos, correct?
I could make them a little shorter. Number two is reward yourself. A lot of people don't think about this because they think like sticker charts and giving yourself a cookie are for children. No, we are all behaving organisms. We all respond to rewards. There is no shame in being responsive to rewards. So figuring out for you, what is it that actually is going to pull your behavior along? You know, maybe it's that thing that distracts you. Maybe you say to yourself, you know what? I'm going to write down three podcast questions and then I can vacuum. Or maybe I'm going to, whatever it is for me. I use this all the time. I will confess there are times when I say, if I grade these next five essays, then I can have a glass of Pinot Grigio. I will confess to it. So that's kind of number two. Like, think about what those rewards are. And sometimes people will think, especially my clients with ADHD, will say things like, well, if I didn't have ADHD, then I wouldn't have to trick myself or I wouldn't have to use these strategies. I'm like, no, everybody has to use these strategies. Like, adulting is about making yourself do things that you don't want to do sometimes.
Literally was talking about this last night with my friend. Like, I can't see you for 3 days, so I'm busy. Like, I'm sad. Like, I want to see you, but I can't. And it's like, yeah, you got to get through it so you can have your,
right,
you know, moment at the end.
Absolutely. And maybe even, like you say, like, one of your rewards is just visualizing to yourself, like, how's it going to feel? How is the me of the future going to feel when this is done? She's going to feel awesome. Or, like, she's going to be able to go out and, you know, hang out with her friends without having this burden, you know, like putting yourself in that future mindset can be really motivating, I think.
Reward is a big one. I really like that.
And it makes it so positive. It makes it about, instead of trying to push yourself to do things, like using the reward to pull yourself towards what's motivating. I even had a graduate school professor. She wasn't my mentor, unfortunately, but she literally had a sticker chart for her graduate students. Like, when you finish your first draft, they get a sticker and they loved it. Of course they love a sticker chart. Well, not everybody does, but maybe that works for some people.
My chemistry teacher gave me stickers in high school and it was the best moment ever when you got one.
Totally. Yeah. And so, yeah. So I think rewards are powerful. They're underappreciated. That idea of setting the small daily goals. And then the third one, which is interesting, I had a third because I think if I were sort of thinking about, you know, doing a 12-week program with somebody, it might be closer to the front, but I thought goals were the first thing to get in there. It's reducing distractions. So this is one that I think is maybe a little more obvious, but, you know, how are you going to set up your workspace? But also, like, okay, our phones are designed to take our attention and turn it into money. So how are we going to work against that, you know? Deciding which notifications you need to block or turn off, you know, making it so that my Outlook email doesn't like ping at me all the time. And the way when I talk to people about this is people, again, have this idea that they should have enough willpower to ignore these distractions. No, the best self-regulators, like, set up their environment so that they don't have to exercise willpower. Like think of your attention as a toddler that's just going to like go to whatever's shiny. Like, that's just what the toddler does. That's just what our attention does. And so what we have to do is, like, you know, put up a fence around the pool so the toddler's not going to fall in the pool. Or sometimes I refer to my cell phone as like a time hole, right? We got to put fences around these time holes. And so, you know, whatever that happens to be for you, thinking about how to reduce distraction. Yeah, so those are the three. Can I ask you a question? So people differ on this. What is your preference for sound in your environment when you're trying to concentrate?
Oh my, that's a good question. I prefer noise. I really like ambience. I grew up in a family of eight, or there's nine of us. So I have eight siblings and lots of noise all the time. So I live in the city now and there's cars driving past and I always have headphones in. Silence can make my thoughts travel
loud.
Yeah, so that's a big distraction for me, but there are times when I have to shut it all down, and that's when I'm very, very focused.
And that's like, I think that's another situation where people sometimes think that there's a right answer, and it's not. It's very individual. So I've heard many people say, if it's total silence, like, that drives me to distraction. Or you know, so finding, like, I personally have this playlist that I've used probably for 10 years now that sort of ambient, you know, music without lyrics. I have to have no lyrics because I'll sing along and then I won't be able to like write. But I use it all the time. Another good thing is, I don't know, I've discovered all these like focus playlists on Spotify. Soundtrack, you wouldn't think of it, but movie soundtracks are great background music because there's no words and they're often like really inspired. Like you're writing and it's like, da, 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 and I'm like, I am amazing. Yes. So again, to go to kind of like come back, I guess, to principles, the idea is like to take these ideas, but you have to really tailor them to what your own preferences are and not think that it's going to be like a one size fits all. Right. And even, and in addition, like a very, what would we say? Like a very, a willingness to just try a bunch of different things and figure out what works. Like a, the fancy term in cognitive behavioral therapy, who love this, the fancy term for this is collaborative empiricism. So meaning between you and the therapist, you together are going to collect information about what works and figure it out. And in this case, it's self-help. So, but you're still doing the like empiricism, like problem solving piece. And not thinking like, well, because that strategy doesn't work, that therefore doesn't mean A, there's something wrong with me, or B, there is no strategy that can possibly work.
Right. I mean, when we started going to school in the first place, that's an adjustment. So coming back and totally. Being inside, it's going to be trial and error.
Right. And you're not going to be perfect at it. I mean, it's especially when you're learning a new skill, like you've been doing it the old way for however many years and it's going to be clunky. And this, even the best skill isn't always going to work, right? Especially during COVID. So many crazy stressful things happening that there are just going to be days that maybe your tools don't work and you've got to like be okay enough with yourself to say like, okay, let's try it again tomorrow. You know, it's hard.
Take a bubble bath, check out.
For sure.
So much juicy information. I love it. Okay, do you have anything else you want to add? Any more anecdotes? Advice, why this is important?
I guess one thing I would say is that why this is important. I mean, it's so important because, and there's so many other things that, you know, we could talk about in terms of self-care. You know, I haven't talked about self-care, but thinking about these strategies as a form of your own self-care. So one thing I often say is it's the you of now being kind to the you of the future. And again, not taking that attitude that you're trying to like whip yourself from behind, but you're trying your best to like to accomplish things that are meaningful to you so that you can overall like reduce your stress level. So it really is a stress reduction and a self-care technique. It's one of many self-care techniques that we should be paying attention to. And just knowing that there are times when even accomplishing the smallest goal is so good for our psychological health, right? Like that sense of accomplishment, even if it's small, gives us a sense of control. It gives us a sense of making a difference in the world, of seeing the results of our efforts. And I guess like, don't be afraid to give yourself a lot of credit for those small accomplishments, especially in these times, because a small accomplishment in the COVID times is a big accomplishment, I guess.
An anthill feels like Mount Rainier.
For sure.
It really does. Just sometimes getting out of bed and brushing your teeth is, you know, getting over the hump.
And I guess maybe, one more thing I would just add is, you know, being, you know, at a university, thinking about in general, like, you know, if the tips on YouTube are not enough, you know, if social support isn't enough, never, never hesitate to sort of reach out to your counseling center, to reach out to your health center, to reach out to a hotline, like whatever it is you feel like you need to support not just your physical health, but your mental health. I mean, hopefully students have heard this a lot, but let me be like one more voice saying like, we, and as a faculty member and somebody who works at a university, like we want people to reach out for help, and it's not easy to ask for help, but it's important.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Dr. Naus.
Sure.
My second guest of the day is Finch Carr. They're a UW student, double majoring in applied physics and astronomy. But today, they are here sharing their experience with ADHD while simultaneously schooling at home. Without further ado, here's Finch.
Alrighty. So I had no knowledge of having any kind of anyone around me having ADHD. I had no knowledge of any family members being diagnosed with it. And of course, now I know that now that I've been diagnosed with it, it's a lot more likely that my immediate family probably has it as well. But before quarantine, I had no clue or any kind of inkling that I would be diagnosed with it. I just kind of pushed all the symptoms just under normality and just kind of brushing them off as just how I operated. And of course, now I just am more aware of what aspects of my life are closely related to my diagnosis. But before quarantine started, I was doing fine as a student. I was doing fine in my relationships and I had like no inkling. And then when quarantine started, when I was isolated with myself most of the time, I wasn't isolating with any family members or anything like that. I had very little contact with the outside world. And so really all I had was Zoom meetings for work and Zoom meetings for school. And then the rest of the time, I was just kind of in my little bubble with myself. And when I was interacting only with myself, it was very easy to see that there was something more going on than what I had previously thought. So my schoolwork, in terms of efficiency and productivity and general quality and just ability to even put pen to paper, it all went from what I would now define as probably like 60-70% to 10% of what it is possible to for me to be now. It got to the point where I was not doing assignments just because I wasn't at my desk. It was just so impossible to sit down and begin working on something that I didn't even really want to do. And I knew even if I did want to do it, which was very, very rare, that there was no way it was achievable. And of course, that's just executive dysfunction to me. And I didn't know it at the time, but yeah. And then, so that was a big, big wake up call, was seeing my grades from spring quarter. I dropped a whole GPA point. And some classes, I didn't use the pass fail system to save my GPA. I used the pass fail system just because I wanted to remain a student and to remain in my major. So it was a big, big view shift. And I see now that like, now that I am diagnosed and now that I'm being treated, that all these, like, what I thought was just normal parts of my life, that they aren't normal parts of my life. And as long as I focus on staying on my medication and calling out certain behaviors and things like that, that I'm doing a lot better. So, yeah.
So when you talk about, you know, certain behaviors in like doing online school versus at home, can you talk about what those behaviors are and then how like you combat them?
Okay. So I mentioned my executive dysfunction. That hasn't been so much of a problem as it was when I first started quarantine and online school, primarily because of my medication, but it still comes up from time to time. And it's noticeable just because I just start falling behind, and I realize like days later that those couple days I've just haven't done anything, or I've distracted myself with things that aren't related to those assignments and things like that. It still applies to things like chores and just other things that like aren't graded by anybody, but like things that need to be done. To-dos on my to-do list kind of just start piling up and piling up and piling up. And so that's one that I can notice pretty easily. Other symptoms, my memory is garbage would probably be the best word to define it. And I just thought that that was how I would live my life, is not being able to remember much of anything. And there's really no treatment for my memory, but I can train it, you know, brain training, but you sharpen a pencil enough and then you no longer have a pencil. So
yeah, I feel like in our 20s and given the state of the world, it is okay, and it's a sign of the times that our memories / brains are not fully functioning how they should. I definitely relate with the memory loss.
Yeah. Symptom. So that's mm-hmm. probably the one I'm most upset about, but there's really nothing I can do about it. So I watch it as it goes. And
yeah, interesting.
In terms of minor symptoms, I fidget so much. My hands need to be doing something all the time. So right now, as I'm talking, I've been messing with my knuckles. And when I get agitated or stressed or nervous, I bite my fingernails and run my hands through my hair and crack my knuckles, things like that. My specific ADHD is definitely very hand focused, I would say. I always enjoy my hands doing something, whether I'm at my best or my worst. A lot of schoolwork that I do is math based, and I'm always writing things down. And even when I feel productive, I know that my hands are doing something or writing something or typing or coding or something to make me feel that way. So it's very hand oriented for me.
Cool. What's your major?
I am a double major in the applied physics department and the astronomy department. So lots of coding, lots of math, lots of explanations and proofs and things like that.
Wow. So what kind of advice do you give other students who are going through or like experiencing similar symptoms, issues as you, even if they're not diagnosed with ADHD?
That's a tough one. I personally haven't met anyone else who's come up to me and been like, you know, how do I cope and how do I manage? Partially because of quarantine, partially just because I just don't know anyone like that. But, and I mean, I was only diagnosed over the summer. Like I struggled with it. I've basically struggled with it my entire life, and it only got so bad in the spring that I had to go see a bunch of people over the summer. And now I'm starting to begin to manage and treat and improve. So in terms of advice, I would say find what you orient your emotions around and what stimulates you the most, and just take the stimuli that you can control and put it to good use, I would say. I work better with background noise, and I don't really see that as a improvement of my focus, but I do get more work done when the TV is on as opposed to when the TV is off. And it's when I say the TV's on, it's behind me and to the side, so I'm not even looking at it, but I can hear it while still focusing on the work that's in front of me visually. And it allows me to get more of what I need to get done. But the same could be done where I could talk with all my friends around and be on my phone and do lots of stuff that isn't going to help me out with the TV on. So it's just applying what helps in a method that gets the most from you, I would say. And you have to be aware of yourself, and you have to catch yourself on what you're doing. Like, I don't want to bite my fingernails. It's not something for me, but I try to call myself out on it when I can. But sometimes I look down and I realize I've bitten the whole nail off without even thinking about it. So
it's like sometimes involuntary. Yeah, try your best. Well, thank you so much, Finch. Is there anything else you want to add, or any other like anecdotes about it?
I would say if the people around you are saying that, you know, it's not something to be worried about if you feel like you may or may not be struggling with ADHD, I would say that, you know, you can still get tested and get evaluated by a physician for it. And if they find that you don't have it, no big deal. But if they find that you do have it, you know, then you find out you have it. But if you never go in the first place, you're never going to know. If you feel like you're struggling with it, but you're not diagnosed, go talk to somebody who knows something about it. And it might work out in your favor, but it certainly won't hurt.
Thank you so much, Finch.
Thank you.
That'll be all for our episode. It was an honor talking to you.
That wraps up our show. Thanks for listening to Quarantine. I'm your host, Beth. See you next week.